ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 7, Text 7. Matah parataram nanyat, kinchidasti dhananjaya, mai sarvamidam protam, sutre manigana iva. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Purport. There is a common controversy over whether the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Absolute Truth is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and this is confirmed in every step. In this verse in particular, it is stressed that the Absolute Truth is a person. That the personality of Godhead is the Supreme Absolute Truth is also the affirmation of the Brahma Sanhita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satyada Ananda Vigraha. That is, the Supreme Absolute Truth, personality of Godhead, is Lord. What's the next word? What's the next word in this sentence? Krishna. All right, someone was listening. Who is the primeval Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalist, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version given in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, Tato yad utaratarang tad arupam anamayam ya itad vidur amritas te bhavanti athetare dukam eva piyanti. In this material world, Brahma, the primeval living entity within the universe, is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings, and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is the transcendence who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental, but those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world. The impersonalist puts more stress on the word arupam, but this arupam is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge as described in the Brahma Sanhita quoted above. Other verses in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad substantiate this as follows. Vedaham etang purushang mahantam adityavarnang tamasah parastat tameva vidit vati mrityumeti nanyah. Panta vidyate yanaya yasmat param na paramasti kinchid yasman naniyo no jayosti kinchit viksha ivas stabdho divi tishthatyekas tenedang purnam purushena sarvam. I know that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conceptions of darkness, only he who knows him can transcend the bonds of birth and death. There is no way for liberation other than this knowledge of the Supreme Person. There is no truth superior to that Supreme Person because he is the supermost. He is smaller than the smallest, and he is greater than the greatest. He is situated as a silent tree, and he illumines the transcendental sky, and as a tree spreads its roots, he spreads his extensive energies. From these verses, one concludes that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all-pervading by his multi-energies, both material and spiritual. I see. Okay. Back to the question, who is supreme? What is supreme? At least it's in both of these questions, it's accepted that there is supreme. If there's no consideration of supremacy, then neither of these questions can arise. Who is supreme? What is supreme? In Sanskrit, there's no clear definition in the word itself between who and what. So in words like yat and tat, that can refer to a person or anything else. Kim tat brahma? What is that brahma? So it doesn't, from the pronoun, I guess that called, from the pronoun itself, we can't understand whether we're referring to an what in English would be called an it or a who. So is the supreme personal or impersonal? In this regard, Srila Prabhupada begins his mammoth treatment of Srimad Bhagavatam in the introduction with the highly perceptive and important observation, which we can understand that this is central to Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is mostly, or nowadays at least, associated with devotees, with Vaishnavas, who explain it in terms of bhakti. And there are also Mayavadis who study Srimad Bhagavatam, or they speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, but they explain it in a different way. Due to their different conception. The conception of the devotee is that Krishna is supreme. The Mayavadi may also accept that. Vishnu is supreme. But they will qualify that statement or modify it and say that, well, yeah, Vishnu is supreme, but then we're all supreme. Or that the appearance of anything being supreme is just an appearance. It's all illusion. The Vishnu is also under Maya, therefore they're called Mayavadi. They think that Maya is greater than Krishna. Or not greater, but because in their understanding, nothing is greater than anything else. It's all the same. But in their misconception, within this big illusion which we all of us who are not really individuals anyway, which we all perceive, within this big illusion which just seems to go on and on forever, so how can it be illusory anyway? But within this illusion, Vishnu is the supreme illusion. So what does that mean? It's actually very offensive. So there are different conceptions. So this introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada begins by stating that the conception of God and the conception of Absolute Truth are not on the same level. They're not the same. There are two different approaches to spiritual life. And Sometimes it's called, in English, often this is distinguished between the spiritual life and religion, the religious life. And actually in Bhagavad Gita that's there also, but not exactly synonymous with the Western or the English language terms, because Arjuna starts off talking about dharma, conceived of in terms of this world, what is right and what is wrong. And Krishna brings Arjuna to the platform of, what do you think? Bhakti? Actually, yoga brings Arjuna to the he brings him to the discussion of yoga. Esha te bihita sankhe buddhi yogam dhananja. He said, okay, we've discussed this in terms of sankhya, now we'll discuss in terms of yoga. So Krishna brings Arjuna to the platform of just thinking, just seeing the whole thing in a different way, that we're not simply religious, but there is the whole spiritual perspective. And actually both of them, in Vedic Dharma, also rests on the understanding that the soul is different from the body. But the implications of that are differently conceived. Persons on the platform of dharma who understand that the body is different from the soul, and they're just interested in elevation to the heavenly planets. And those who are interested in yoga, they are interested in liberation from the material world. Those who are, of course, this is a very general and broad way of speaking. The whole concept of dharma is extremely nuanced. It means it has many subtleties, and there are many levels of understanding that. We also speak of Bhagavad dharma, Jaiva dharma, or real dharma. Please just sit a little bit to the side, like this, so that the back is not to the deity. But persons who are interested in dharma, they're interested in making or whose level of religious understanding is primary, they are interested in making this world a better place by being good people, and because they're in ignorance and they know nothing more than this world, they're interested in the illusory pursuit of trying to make this world a better place. And they just think if we are all good and nice and we have enough hospitals and schools and eye camps and so on, that everything will be nice in the world. So it's a primary understanding, and it's religious, but it's not very developed. So yoga means not to be so much interested in making this world a better place as to get out of it altogether. So Bhagavad Gita is yoga shastra. Om Tat Sat Iti Bhagavad Gita Upanishatsu da 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 Arjuna Vishada Yoga Pratamadhyaya Bhagavad Gita Yoga Shastra. Yeah, that's it. Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishatsu Yoga Shastra Upanishad. Yeah. So it's described as yoga shastra. So there is religion and there is spirituality, and especially in America, in the younger generation at the present time, there are many people who say that I am spiritual but not religious, because religion suggests a system of various restrictions, a faith system. And it particularly suggests the idea of a God and believing in God, whereas spiritual gives the idea of something esoteric, where you find your own way to the truth. And when you find the way to the truth, you find that you are the truth. That's what is spirituality. It's supposed to be the misunderstanding of that. So the conception of God is generally conceived of by the persons who consider themselves to be spiritual as for people on a lower level. Srila Prabhupada writes here, the conception of God and the conception of the Absolute Truth are not on the same level. So for people who are foolish, sentimental, who feel they need a value system to guide them, who need the psychological crutch of thinking that that's a God, okay, they can have that. But for those who are really spiritual, you going to quote me on this? Those who are really spiritual, they know that ultimately there's an ineffable oneness. And that is the Absolute Truth. The conception of God and the conception of the Absolute Truth are not on the same level. So which is the Srimad Bhagavatam all about? About God or the Absolute Truth? What do you think? Well, Srila Prabhupada writes here, the Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the Absolute Truth. There you go. Didn't say about God. But actually that is, we find in the beginning of Bhagavatam, this Janmadhyasya Yataha, which is the taken from the Vedanta Sutra, or Brahma Sutra, which begins, Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now one should inquire into Brahma, which is often translated into English as the Absolute Truth. And Satyam Param Dhimahi. We meditate on the Supreme Truth, the Supreme Reality. All these words are only somewhat translatable, by the way. Satya is translated in English as truth, which is okay, but the whole conception of truth or the conception of satya within Vedic culture is not the same as the conception of truth within that of the culture connected with the English-speaking world. So the Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the Absolute Truth. And there are many statements in Shastra which are concerned with the Absolute Truth. This Atato Brahma Jignyasa, this truth. Now, that truth of the oneness of everything, that there is the underlying and overarching spiritual oneness, this is described in Shastra, but actually there are many mystics throughout the history of the world who have realized that to some extent, to a greater or lesser extent, not only in India, outside India also, without recourse to Shastra. And just like here in this part of the world, Tamil Nadu and Puducherry, they're two mystics of the modern age, both in the 20th century, the Ramana Maharshi and Aurobindo. So they were both considered to be realized souls, and they both said that the realization they'd come to was not via Shastra, but when they study Shastra, they find it confirms what they already realized. So then what do you need Shastra for? Well, Vedanta Sutra says, Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now we should inquire into the nature of Brahma. But there are many mystics, not only in India. There in the Western world, there are various mystics. It's not much encouraged within the Christian tradition, but there have been a few who managed to do that and to have their contemplation and realize that actually I and we are all God, and God means the all-pervading spiritual force. So one can come to that realization simply by introspection and meditation. And then they think that the descriptions of God, they refer to, there are descriptions of God, just like within Shastra. There are specific descriptions of Bhagavan. We know, because Srila Prabhupada, those of us within ISKCON, we know very well that the definition of Bhagavan from Shastra is Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasa shriyaha jnana vairagya yoschaiva shannang bhaga itingena. One who is possessed of these six qualities in full, all Aishvarya, it means that which qualifies one as an Ishvara. It's usually translated as opulence. One who is that fully, that means that no one else has that quality, only he has. If others have it, it's only because he's invested it in them. If anyone has the quality of Aishvarya outside of Bhagavan, it's actually not outside of Bhagavan, but he's just invested it in them. It's not Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya power, yasha, fame, shriya, beauty, jnana, knowledge, vairagya, detachment. So all these qualities in full, who has that is Bhagavan. So this is the conception of God. Those who are in the conception of the Absolute Truth, who realize that without going through any Shastric process, they presume the Absolute Truth to be impersonal. And they think that descriptions in Shastra are for less... descriptions in Shastra of God, of Bhagavan, are for less intelligent persons, and they presume that all such statements, they are to be understood in the light of what they consider to be the most important Shastric statements, and therefore Shankaracharya identified as Mahavakya the Tattvamasi. You are that. That means, in this case, the ultimate reality. Pragyanam Brahma. That can be translated in various ways. That realization is God. Realization is ultimate. Realization is of the Brahma, the absolute reality. So, as in this purport, Srila Prabhupada states that in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, there is the word arupam, and the impersonalists put more stress on this word arupam. They elsewhere in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, which is generally considered to be a theistic Upanishad, but there are terms like tamishvaranam paramam maheshvaram, that he is the controller. He is the supreme among the great controllers. But the impersonalists, due to their conception of the absolute truth as being impersonal, they consider conceptions of God, a personal God, to be not the highest understanding. So Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth, but that doesn't mean that the Bhagavatam is promoting something impersonal. The point is that the absolute truth is Krishna, and that the understanding of the absolute truth as being beyond Krishna, or the unborn within Krishna, as a certain philosopher wrote about, that is a misunderstanding. Of course, the impersonalist will say that, yes, Krishna is supreme, but so is everything else, which means nothing is supreme. But that Krishna is supreme, actually supreme, which means mataparattaram nanyat kinchidasti. There is nothing superior to him, and that this, when Krishna says kinchid asti, na kinchid asti, there is nothing even slightly superior to Krishna, then this means everything. So this is to be taken literally, whereas the impersonalist will take this to mean that the absolute is speaking through Krishna. That's their interpretation. So the Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the absolute truth, because that is the subject of the Shastra. Sarve Veda Yat Padam Amananti. All the Vedas speak of this point. What is the point? Well, those who, different people will take their different points. Vyasadeva himself in Vedanta Sutra establishes, Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Vedas, he, in his own sutras, there are so many different sutras that have been written, Yoga Sutras and Mimamsa Sutras, but Vyasadeva in Brahma Sutra, he establishes Atato Brahma Jignasa. This is the purpose of the Vedas, because the Vedas, Nigama Kalpa, this is the Veda is Kalpataru. There are all kinds of ideas and conceptions that one can construe from that, but the ultimate and actual purpose is Brahma, which means the ultimate reality. What is that ultimate reality? The impersonalists, they take that to be impersonal. Srimad Bhagavatam takes up the theme of the Brahma Sutra. Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now we should inquire into the nature of the Supreme. Now we should inquire into the nature of the Supreme. Then what is that Supreme? Janmadyasya Yataha. That is the next sutra of Brahma Sutras. And what is that? That is Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Janmadyasya Yataha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudev, who is Bhagavan, who is to be offered obeisance to, who is Om, Omkar, Pranav, who is to be meditated on via Pranav. He is that Janmadhyasa Yataha, from Yato Va Imani Bhutani Jayante Yena Jatani Jivanti Yat Prayat Yabhisang Vishanti Tad Vijayasasva Tad Brahmeti. That from which everything emanates, that in which everything exists, that into which everything again enters, that is the proper subject of inquiry, that is Brahma. So that Brahma is Krishna. Now, this is the point that Srimad Bhagavatam makes. Not that the personality of Godhead is subordinate to anything impersonal, but that that which is conceived of as impersonal is kind of cheating for the spiritualists who want to be cheated. That Brahmajyoti, that is not, it's not that it's not real, but it should be properly understood as not the ultimate in itself, but as the bodily effulgence, or the spreading potency of the personality of Godhead. Yad Brahma Tadupanishadi Tadapya. Tadapyasya Tanuba. What is that? In the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mangalacharan. Brahma Upanishadi Tadapyasya Tanuba. There's described that the Brahma, which is described in the Upanishads, that is the effulgence which emanates from the personality of Godhead, who is Sharaishwarya Purna, from the personality of Godhead. Yadadvaita Brahmopanishadi Tadapyasya Tanubha, that which is conceived of as being without duality, as the Brahma, the absolute reality, the non-dual spiritual reality, which is described in the Upanishads, that is the effulgence of the body of the personality of Godhead, who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, this Brahma, that is this, the impersonal conception, that is not incorrect, but to perceive of it as the ultimate reality to which everything, or within which everything else is subsumed, that is an illusion. That is incorrect. One may feel that one has become one with the Supreme, or that there's no differentiation between one entity, or no differentiation of any kind at any level. But that is not actually a fact. And that is understandable from Shastra. And even without going to Shastra, at the very basic level of epistemology, which means Praman Tattva, by Pratyaksha, it is very clearly understandable, as Sripad Madhvacharya points out, that there are real differences. The difference between, in this world, we're in the world of Jara, that which is matter. So there are differences between various manifestations of matter. There are differences between matter and spirit. There's difference each jiva is different from every other one. So at least we can understand the difference between jara and jara. One material entity and another material entity. So that we can understand from pratyaksha. Then there is difference between jiva and jara. There's a difference between one jiva and another jiva. There's a difference between a jiva and Ishvara. These are real differences. If the Mayavadis accept that what we see all around us as being the illusory world, but then if it's always there, then how can you say it's has no existence? So there are so many holes in their argument. But it appeals to persons who are less intelligent. Although they think they're very intelligent, they think these people who believe in God are just fools. Now, Vedanta Sutra begins, Atato Brahma Jignasa. One should inquire into the nature of the Supreme. One can realize to some extent the nature of the all-pervading Supreme by one's individual effort. But Vyasadeva says, Atato Brahma Jignyasa, better than pursuing one's own effort is to inquire into the nature of Brahma. How can one be sure that one has actually realized this Supreme? We may feel like that, and one may have an experience of some kind of bliss, of perceiving the oneness of everything. But how can know whether that is correct or not? Therefore, one should inquire into the nature of Brahma. And how will that inquiry be conducted? Shastra yonitvat. Everything should be understood from Shastra. And of course, Shastra has to be understood through self-realized persons. So this argument will go on forever. What is Supreme? Who is Supreme? First of all, what is the nature of the Supreme? And those who are impersonalists, they say there are five representations of the Supreme. They do panchopasana. And mostly, although they may recognize that in Shastra Vishnu is recognized as Supreme, but often they are more attracted to the worship of Lord Shiva and Shakti. So their inclination is seen in that they are attracted to the worship of Lord Shiva, who is the master of Maya, and who oversees persons in a ghostly state of consciousness. So they like Lord Shiva because he's meditating and he's renounced, and they themselves are in a ghostly consciousness of denying their own personality. But they never stop to think, what is Lord Shiva meditating upon? It may be presumed that he's meditating on some impersonal Brahman, but Shastra says that he meditates on Vishnu. So, this argument will go on forever, but here, yes, it will go on forever, because in this material world, there will always be people who are inclined to an impersonal conception of spirituality, which is actually somewhat spiritual and in one sense advanced over the grossly materialistic concept. But it's not free of illusion. One can advance fully and become fully self-realized in the impersonal system or impersonal method and not make one step forward toward one's real constitutional position of being a servant of Krishna. And actually one goes backward. Because one thinks that, well, I don't need this, and that's for less intelligent people. And now I realize, what do I need all this idea of being subordinate to some god, because I'm already self-realized by my own effort, not seeing our total insignificance and that we are dependent. We need to learn this. Brahma Jignyasa, we need to learn this. Arjuna needed to learn from Krishna, even though he appeared to be quite competent by himself. By himself, he had several times, he'd fought with formidable foes, he'd fought with Lord Shiva, he'd fought with the Nivarta Kavachas, he'd fought in the guise of a still looking like a eunuch, he had fought with all the Kauravas. And he'd emerge success by himself. But in spiritual realization, he had to take a guide. If we just try to do it all by ourselves, it doesn't work. We are, because illusion is greater than us, we come to the wrong conclusion. So Brahma Jignasa. One should inquire, what is the nature of Brahma? One should learn from Shastra. And here Krishna unequivocally says, Matah parataram nanyat kinjit asti. There is no truth, nothing superior to me. And to make a mockery of accepting the Bhagavad Gita while coming to an absolutely different conclusion to the Bhagavad Gita, the impersonalists, they have to make this incredible word juggle. I say incredible because these people are supposed to be learned scholars, saintly people. Saintly means they should be sincere and straightforward. But they make this incredible word jugglery and of saying that, well, when Krishna says, I am supreme, that's actually the impersonal speaking through Krishna. Why not just take it as it is? Then you have to interpret that all the statements of Shastra, Yang Brahma Varunendra Rudra Marutastun Vantiti Vyaista Vai, all the great demigods, they're all worshipping him, yasyantam sura sura gona, yasyantam navidu sura sura devaya te namaha. That person for whom there's no end, no limit, that Krishna described in Srimad Bhagavatam, but the impersonalists, because they come with their conception of the Absolute Truth being impersonal, they come to Krishna, they come to Srimad Bhagavatam, they come to all these leelas, they say it's all very nice and it's all very good, but ultimately, tattvamasi, you are that. Instead of seeing that you belong to that. Not that you are the ultimate supreme. So, there are some more points on that. Let's see if I made any others in my little attempt to prepare something. Yeah. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Yeah. Jnanis and yogis are also transcendentalists. Yes, they are transcendentalists inasmuch as they aspire to go beyond the modes of material nature. They aspire to go. They understand that the illusion, the attraction between the senses and the sense objects is the cause of bondage, and they attempt to go beyond that. Therefore, they are called transcendentalists. They accept that there is a spiritual nature, and they aspire to enter that. So jnanis and yogis, they can be called transcendentalists. Now the Buddha, Srila Prabhupada said, they achieve the nirvana. Buddhists, Srila Prabhupada says, they achieve the pradhan. Or in some place he said they go to the Shiradaka or Viraja, something like this. Yeah, Viraja. Yeah. Are the Buddhists a kind of jnani? They're not considered Vedic jnanis because they don't. They speak the same language as the Mayavadis, but they with a different vocabulary. They use different terms, but very much similar concepts, but they don't accept the Vedas. So they can be examples of persons who they aspire for an impersonal realization, without following the Vedic process. Although actually, Buddhism was born in the Vedic culture, and it's very difficult for people to go conceptually outside that which they already conceive of. So Buddhism developed on the stolen. It's like someone steals a car and then changes the number plates. So it's the stolen template of Vedic understanding. So that in itself is an offense. And Buddhism has given rise to what many Western scholars consider to be Indian in general is considered to be a great land of philosophy, and Buddhists they are counted among some of the greatest philosophers. Because Buddha didn't teach very much, actually, just like Jesus didn't teach very much. So they had to, but the idea that he or was derived from him was of the what we would call impersonal realization. But it's very difficult to, unless you accept the Vedic version of there being the Brahma, the ultimate state, then it becomes even more difficult to substantiate. And so they made this multiple schools of philosophy trying to substantiate their fantastic ideas, which were borrowed a lot from Vedic logic and all kinds of fantastic ideas. I mean, when I say fantastic, I mean in the sense of not being laudable, but being just weird. Beyond the imagination. All kinds of strange ideas. If you accept their premises, then actually, if there is no underlying spiritual basis of everything, then how can there be a continuity of what we perceive from second to second? How do they answer that? There isn't. Just everything, moment by moment, one moment what happens, and then the next moment, there is no continuity, they say. And this is shunyavad, there's nothingness. There's no connection. Did I explain it well? No. Do I understand it properly? No. Does anyone understand it properly? I don't know if it's possible to understand it properly. Doesn't make any sense. But it's given rise to incredible extrapolations of philosophy. And therefore these impersonalists, they think they're so much superior because they have all this complex philosophy which only they can understand. And Krishna says, Patrang pushpang palang toyam yome bhaktya prayachati tadahang bhakti upahritamashnami prayatatmana. You offer me leaf, flower, fruit and water with bhakti, and I'll accept it. I think, that's just for kindergarten people. That's what they think. And they're caught up in these incredibly complex and abstruse mental gymnastics. Because if you try to work everything out by your own intelligence, you can't do it. You can never come to any proper conclusion about anything. Actually, by one's own intelligence, nothing can be established as a fact. When we are simply lost. If we are to try to establish on the basis of our intelligence, we have to accept something as being real. So if you try to establish that ultimately everything is unreal, then you're caught in a logical fallacy. And if you want to establish it only on the basis of your own intelligence, then you can't. On the basis of our own intelligence, we can't understand whether anything exists actually at all, including ourselves. Everything's up to doubt. So you just go mad, that's all. So we accept that the Shastra, that is axiomatically accepted, apaurusheya. Veda is not spoken by anyone or given by anyone. It's knowledge which exists independently of whatever we might think. It's knowledge which eternally exists.
Now, another place, it is said that jnana and yoga, jnanis and yogas cannot achieve their goal unless there is some mixture.
Unless there is some mixture of bhakti, they can't achieve their goal. They have to please Krishna somehow. Yeah, I often wondered, where did they get that little bit of bhakti? Where is it there? They seemed, they recite Bhagavad Gita with Arjuna bowing down, Shirasa Pranamya, bowing down with his head to Krishna. They may appreciate that in some kind of way. You must meet Mayavadis here and there, and they have some appreciation, although it's mixed up with their wrong ideas. But they have some kind of perverse appreciation of Krishna and bhakti. Seems to be largely knocked out by their offensive attitude. The one time I went to Badrinath, which was, we were there together. When was that? About early 1980s? 95. Yeah, it must have been early 19s. Yeah, mid 95. So I think you weren't there then when I went to, I met some priests. You were there? They're from Kerala originally. They still identify themselves even after more than 1,000 years as being from Kerala. And I said, oh, your devotees. Oh, very nice. So then he got out his Bhagavatam and started reading the Sanskrit verses of Gopi Geet from Bhagavatam. And there was some, oh, your devotees, he's right, he appreciated some appreciation. Something is there. Krishna is very kind if he accepts that. But for us, that's a downfall. If we think that these Mayavadis are, if we want to hear Bhagavatam from them, then our devotion is spoiled. God and the conception of the Absolute Truth are not on the same level. The Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the Absolute Truth. So what does that mean? The Srimad Bhagavatam is not concerned with the subject of God. Rather, Srimad Bhagavatam shows that God, Bhagavan, the Supreme Person, is that person who ultimately everyone is seeking. The not only the jnanis and the yogis, even the karmis, even the vikarmis. Everyone is ultimately seeking happiness, and that is Krishna. That is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So by saying that the Srimad Bhagavatam hits on the target of the Absolute Truth, means that the philosophical, it takes up the philosophical search, which is the beginning of actual spiritual understanding, going beyond the animal platform. It begins with the philosophical search. those who are already on the platform of God consciousness, for them, philosophical understanding is not important in the sense that their relationship with Krishna, their spontaneous love for Krishna does not depend on a faith that is bolstered by philosophical understanding. Doesn't mean that they discount philosophical understanding. That may also add to their appreciation of Krishna. Those who are on the platform of worshipping Krishna in opulence, understanding his opulence, they feel great love for Krishna, and at the same time they appreciate his greatness as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is one of the elements of their appreciation, that he's so infinitely superior to us, but nevertheless he's so kind that he takes personal interest in us. So the philosophical inquiry is not discounted, although Srimad Bhagavatam takes us right into the Rasa Lila, which is inconceivable if we explain Rasa Lila as it is, and instead of the way that Mayavadis explain it as the supreme cosmic dance, the supreme dancing with himself. They have all kinds of strange explanations. But if that is the pinnacle of exchange with Krishna, bhakti. So Bhagavatam takes us there. That is relishable by the devotees. The description not only of Rasa Lila but of Dhruva Lila, Prahlad's activity. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard about Prahlad and Dhruva again and again and again from Srimad Bhagavatam. But the philosophical understanding, Brahma Jignasa, that's philosophical inquiry, but it's not only philosophical, it's not what is called armchair philosophy. There has to be sadhana, there has to be purification. To understand, it has to be a process of purification. It's not that one can become God conscious without a process of purification. So it's not that dharma is totally rejected. When we go from dharma, what is that? The Om Tat Sat. What is that? Om Tat Sat Bhagavad Gita Upanishadsu Brahma Vidya Yang Yoga Shastra. It's Brahma Vidya. It's knowledge of the ultimate. It is Yoga Shastra. But as Baladev Vidyabhushan comments in his commentary on the first sutra, Brahma Sutra, the one, there has to be a basis of the dharma. Anyway, these are all very elaborate topics. Intricate, they're all intimately interrelated, but we have to see the ultimate goal of it all. It's not just a jungle of words, as Shankara says, this Shabda Jala Maharanyam Kevala Chitta Brahmana. It's not just a big jungle of words that simply bewilders us. If we don't know what the goal is, we will become bewildered. Therefore, it's very good to understand from the very beginning the conception of God, which to the impersonalist might seem simplistic, but there is the one Supreme Person who knows us, cares for us, who loves us, who we also must love. With that conception, we can find our way through this, or we can be guided through this otherwise apparently impossible to disentangle jungle of philosophical concepts and thoughts, and our whole consciousness is influenced by our previous actions. It's extremely, the psychology, in the modern world, the psychology, extremely complex. But just this simple point, Jeev Krishna Das Abhishas Korleta Arjukanai. Simply we have to understand, We are spiritual beings, we are eternal servants of Krishna. And that is the compass that will guide us through all of this. Hare Krishna! Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.